Welcome everyone to a series of Shiurim in Hashkafa. Tonight's topic is what we can prove about God. Now, if for those of you who believe that you can't prove the existence of God, or that in order to believe in God you need a leap of faith, tonight's Shiur is going to come as a great surprise. So let's begin. And begin with a mathematical riddle. Let's take a stick 12 inches long. Chop that stick in half. Now you have two sticks 6 inches long. Chop those two sticks in half, and now you have four sticks 3 inches long. Keep chopping those sticks, and chopping and chopping and chopping. 4 inches, 8 inches, 16, 32, 64. Keep going and going and going. How long can you chop those sticks for? And how many sticks can you chop that 12 inches into? Infinity. Okay, a 12-inch stick can be chopped into an infinite amount of points. Fair enough. Next question. Take a football field made of 100 yards. Chop that football field into two football fields, both of 50 yards each. Take those 50 yards and chop them into 25 yards and chop and chop and chop and chop and chop. How much can you chop that 100-yard football field into? Also infinity. So a 12-inch stick can be chopped up into an infinite amount of points, and a 100-yard football field could also be chopped up into an infinite amount of points. So now I have a question. If you have an infinite amount of points arranged side by side with to each other, are you going to have a 12-inch stick or a 100-yard football field? Which one is it? If A divided by B equals C, then C times B equals A. So if you're telling me that you could take a 12-inch stick and you can make it into a million, into an infinite amount of points, that means if you take an infinite amount of points, put them side by side, you get a 12-inch stick. But if you're telling me that if you take a football field of 100 yards and chop it up, you can chop it up into an infinite amount of points, then if you take an infinite amount of points and put them side by side, what you're going to get is a 100-yard football field. So which is it? If both could be chopped up into an infinite amount of points, what you're telling me is that a football field and a 12-inch stick is the same size. And that's absurd. The answer is that you cannot chop up neither the football field nor a 12-inch stick into an infinite amount of points. And the reason you can't do it is because no matter how many times you chop that stick or you chop that football field, and no matter how large the number you're going to of sticks or slices you're going to chop it into, the number will always be a finite number. No matter how many times you chop, because there is an endless supply of finite numbers out there, you'll never finish the amount of finite numbers. So no matter how long you chop, and you keep chopping and chopping and chopping, and you can keep chopping forever. You can keep chopping and never stop. But no matter how many times you chop, the number of slices will always be finite. That's the answer. Infinity is not a big number that if you count long enough, you'll be able to reach it. Infinity is not a number. Infinity means the unreachable. Infinity is something that you could never count up to. If you count and count and count and you keep counting forever, if I come back to you in 10 billion years and you're still counting, you're still going to be counting finite numbers. Because there is an endless supply of finite numbers, you will never finish all the finite numbers in order to reach infinity. And so no matter how much you chop that football field into, and no matter how much you chop that stick into, it'll always be a finite amount of chops. And this is the beginning of what we need to know about God, because if we say that God is infinite or God is not finite, we may as well know what infinity means. Another example that illustrates the same point. Let's say you have a hotel. Hotel with an infinite amount of rooms, fully occupied. No vacancy. You come into the hotel and you tell the manager in the lobby that you want a room. Manager tells you there's no room, there's no vacancies, it's fully occupied. So you tell him, well, look, I have an idea. There's an infinite amount of rooms here, right? So here's what you do. You take the person in room number one and you put him in room number two. You take the person in room number 2 and you put him in room number 3. So on and so forth, so you move everybody up one room. Infinite amount of rooms, right? Infinity plus 1 is infinity. So just keep moving everybody up and I will take room 1. Next guy comes in and has the same idea and everybody moves up a room and he takes room 1. And you can do that forever. So we have a strange thing, strange meaning absurd. You have a hotel that's fully occupied, no vacancies yet. It has an infinite amount of vacancies. The answer is, you can't have a hotel with an infinite amount of rooms. No matter how many rooms you have in that hotel, it's going to be finite. You cannot have a hotel with an infinite amount of rooms. You cannot have a desert with an infinite amount of sand grains. You can't have a sky with an infinite amount of stars. There's no such thing as no matter how many stars you have, it's still a finite number. You can still add and you can continue adding and adding and adding sand and adding and adding and adding jelly beans to a bowl forever. And you can continue adding so that you'll never stop adding. However, no matter how many jelly beans you have in that bowl, no matter how many grains of sand you have in that desert, and no matter how many stars you have in that sky, it's going to be a finite number. Because you will never exhaust the amount of finite numbers. That being the case, that infinity is not a large number. It cannot be reached. Anything that has been reached cannot be infinite. I have a question. The amount of moments in time, the amount of minutes, the amount of seconds from the beginning of time until today, was it infinite or finite? Anybody? Finite. It has to be finite. The reason it can't be infinite is because if there was an infinite amount of time between the beginning of time or the beginning of history until today, we never would have reached today. You cannot have already traversed an infinite amount of time. In other words, if let's say all the way from the beginning of history until now, somebody would be counting every moment of time. Let's say even you want to say, forget about right now for the fact that the world was created 6,000 years ago. Let's not think about that right now. Let's say even the world was always here. Time was always here. So no problem. Let it be always here. Question. You take somebody from the beginning of time that was always here, and every moment of time he's counting. 1, 2, 3, forever he was counting. The number that he would be up to today, would it be infinite or finite? Finite. It can't be infinite because there's an endless supply of finite numbers, and no matter how long he's counting, he never would have finished the amount of finite numbers. If he would be putting a jelly bean in a bowl for every minute that transpired throughout history, would the amount of jelly beans in the bowl be infinite or finite? See what I mean? It is not possible that the amount of time in the past could have been infinite. The amount of time in the past had to have been a finite amount of time. A finite amount of minutes, a finite amount of seconds. But being that it was finite, that means that it had to have a beginning. Time had to begin somewhere. Time, you say time always was here, but always is a finite amount of time. And because there was a finite amount of time, because time is finite, it had to have a beginning. And because it had to have a beginning, meaning it had to have a start, there's something that caused time to start. Because nothing can cause itself, nothing can create itself, doesn't make any sense. So there was some entity, some cause, some reason, that something that caused time to begin. Now because it caused time to begin, it has to exist outside of time. Above time, without time, you cannot have space. So this thing that started time, exists above time and exists above space. There's something out there that started time. Not bound to time, not bound to space. Some cause that caused the beginning of all of that. But Rabbi say that's just a warm-up. The real proof is coming. Everything in the world that happens has to have a reason. If I throw the dice and the dice lands on 10, There has to be a reason it landed on 10 as opposed to landing on 12. The reason it landed on 10, well, is a combination of many reasons. It has to do with the fact that the speed at which I threw the dice, the strength with which I threw it. It has to do with the texture and the hardness and the thickness of the table that the dice bounced on. It has to do maybe with the wind in the room. It has to do with a lot of things. But if you put all those reasons together and all those causes together, that's the reason why the dice landed on 12 as opposed to 10. And of course, if I re-perform that entire process with the exact same circumstances that led the dice to land on 10 and as opposed to 12, the exact same circumstances as if it was a videotape replay of what happened first, the dice will land on 10 again. Logic tells us that the same set of circumstances is going to result in the same effects. The same set of causes is going to result in the same effect. If you take the same exact clone, two dimensions in reality, and the exact same thing is happening, and somebody throws the exact same dice in dimension number one as the one that throws the dice in dimension number two, the dice in the exact same environment, exact same circumstances, no difference whatsoever, carbon copies, clones of each other, these two dimensions, these two worlds, the dice are going to land on the exact same number without a question. And if the dice land on a different number, that's because one of the causes, one of the reasons that existed in one of the set of circumstances that existed in the first scenario changed and exists. There's a different cause in the second scenario. Exact same set of causes results in the exact same set of effects. Exact same set of reasons has the exact same results. Everything has to have a reason. Everything has to have a reason because. If it doesn't have a reason, then, well, if there are a few options that could happen, if the dice could land on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, one die, so why should it land on 1 more than 2, or why should it land on 2 more than 3? It could have landed on any. There's a reason why it landed on 1 as opposed to 2. Again, if there's two options, so then we always need a reason why something ends up with option one as opposed to option two. If there are no options, then you don't need a cause. If the dice, the dice have six on every side of them, both dice, and I throw the dice are going to land, the dice are going to give me a 12. And you can't ask what the reason is for the dice giving me a 12 because there were no other options. Yes, the question is, you may say, why was the number 6 on every side of both dice? It could have been, there was an option, it could have been 5, 4, 3, 2, or 1. And there's a reason why there's 6 as opposed to 5, 4, 3. The reason is I carved out a 6. And there's a reason why you can say, why did I throw 2 dice instead of 3? Because theoretically I could have thrown 3. There are many, many options over here, and whenever there are many options, many theoretical possibilities, theoretical scenarios, you need a reason why, of all the theoretical scenarios, one of those became a reality. But if if both dice only have sixes on the side, you're not going to be able to ask me, well, okay, why did the dice land on 12 and not any other number? The answer is because those were the only options. And yes, you can then ask, well, why did the dice have 6 and not 5? That's true. But once the dice do have 6, you don't need a reason why it landed on 6, because there are no other options. Whenever there are options, something needs a reason. So, take this table. This table exists, and there has to be a reason why the table exists. Why does there have to be a reason? Because theoretically, this table could have not existed. Because the table exists, as opposed to not existing, the question is, why does it not exist? Why does the table exist, as opposed to not existing? The answer is, because it has wood, it has legs, it has all of this. There's something that caused it to exist. Theoretically, it could have not been here. Theoretically, it could have, yes, been here. And there has to be some cause that determines, that decides that option two, meaning existence, happens over option one, which is non-existence. Everything in the world has a cause. If I throw a ball up, it falls down. There's a cause why it flew up in the air, and there's a cause why it got pulled down. The cause it threw up in the air was because I threw it at a certain speed, with a certain strength, a certain way, at a certain time. The reason it fell down was because of the force of gravity. Now, theoretically, it didn't have to fly up. Theoretically, when I threw the ball, it could have gone down. But the reason it went up and not down is because of the force of how I threw it. When it went up, theoretically, it could have stayed up. But there's a reason why it went down, and that's gravity. Whenever there's two theoretical possibilities, and one of those theoretical possibilities become reality, then you need a reason why theoretical possibility A did not happen, theoretical possibility B did happen. Now, of course, the cause that made the ball fall down, which is gravity, also has to have a cause. It has to have a reason. What's the reason there's gravity? We know gravity needs a reason because theoretically there didn't have to be gravity. Theoretically, there could be no gravity. Theoretically, there could be yes gravity. There needs to be a reason why there's gravity as opposed to not being gravity. And there has to be a reason why gravity is this strong as opposed to a bit stronger or a bit weaker, because theoretically, any of this could have happened. If more than one thing could have happened, then there has to be a reason why the particular thing that did happen did. So not only does everything that happened has to have a reason, but the reasons also have to have reasons. And the reasons for the reasons have reasons as well. And yes, the reasons for the reasons for the reasons have their reasons. And their cause of the cause of the cause also has a cause. And because nothing can happen without a cause, there has to be a chain of causes going back in history that led eventually to everything we see in the world. The fact that that wall is yellow has to have a reason. The reason is because we painted it yellow. The reason we painted it yellow, the reason the paint was yellow as opposed to another color is because the chemicals in the paint. Why are the chemicals in the paint reflecting yellow light? Well, there's a specific reason for that. Why then there's a reason for the reason. And everything that happens in the world has a long chain of reasons that stretch back in history, a regression of reasons, a regression of causes. And that's a simple intuitive rule. Every effect has to have a cause. It's intuition. It's called the rule of causation. It's simple logic. But now I have a question. This chain of causes, this regression of causes that stretches back into the past, the amount of causes that led to this, all the circumstances we see today, all the causes that happened from now going back in time into the past, are they infinite or finite? If every time a cause happened, a new cause, somebody threw a jelly bean into a bowl, would the amount of jelly beans in the bowl today be infinite or finite? All in favor of infinite, show your hands. Very good. All in favor of finite, show your hands. Absolutely. The amount of causes had to be finite. Because you could not have already traversed, you could not have already had an infinite amount of causes. You cannot have an infinite amount of jelly beans in that bowl. If somebody would be counting the amount of causes, he cannot have reached an infinite number, because there is an endless supply of finite numbers, and no matter how many causes there were, the number would still be finite. But what this means is that stretching all the way back in time, there's a cause. The first cause, if the causes are finite, that means there has to be a first one. It had to start somewhere, just like time started. There's a first time moment that had some kind of cause. There's a first cause all the way back in the chain, but that first cause didn't have any cause Because remember, the chain of causes, the regression of causes, has to end somewhere, and it ends by that beginning cause, that first cause. Now, this first cause, whatever it is, didn't have any cause. It exists, it has no reason for its existence, or it existed, but it had no reason for its existence. And how do we understand that? It doesn't make any sense. How could something exist and have no reason for its existence? Doesn't make any sense. We just said, if something happens, there has to be a reason it happened as opposed to not happening. So this first cause had to have a reason that it exists as opposed to not existing. On the other hand, it's impossible that there shouldn't be a cause that doesn't have a reason, a cause that doesn't have a cause, because if every cause would have a cause, the chain, the regression of causes going back would never end, and we know it has to end somewhere because it has to be finite. If it's finite, it had to have a beginning. So how do we understand this? How do we answer this contradiction? On one hand, we know there has to be a first cause that doesn't have a reason. On the other hand, we know that everything has to have a cause. The answer is, that everything we know of has to have a cause. But remember, we said that the reason everything has to have a cause is because theoretically it could have not existed. Theoretically, some other scenario would have happened, and there has to be a reason why scenario B, meaning existence, happened over scenario A, which is non-existence. Yes, it's true, everything needs a cause, but there's a reason everything needs a cause. The reason everything needs a cause is because everything could have happened differently. When I throw a ball, it could have gone up. When I threw a ball, it could explode. When I throw a ball, it could disappear theoretically. When I throw a ball up, it could stay up. When I throw a ball, it could go down. When I throw a ball, it could blow up. And there's a reason why things happen the way they happen, as opposed to other ways that theoretically they could have happened. But let's say you have something that exists. A different type of existence than anything we've experienced. Everything that exists today, everything that ever existed, anything that we can imagine having existence, could also have not existed. And because it could also have not existed, there has to be a reason why existence, option two, actually happened as opposed to option one, existence, like the dice. That could have landed on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. But let's say there was a type of existence analogous to a set of dice where the number 6 is on every side. Something exists that could never have theoretically not existed. This chair didn't have to be here. It happens to be here. What made it be here? Therefore, it needs a cause. This building didn't have to be here. Theoretically, it could have been not here. But it's here. What caused it to be here? When something goes up, it could have theoretically stayed up. What causes it to come down as opposed to staying up? If something could have not existed, what causes it to exist? But what if there's something that could never have even theoretically not existed? Something where non-existence is not an option. Yes, it's beyond our comprehension, but what would happen if there would be such a thing, theoretically? The answer is such a thing would not need a cause. Because the only time something needs a cause to exist is when it theoretically could have not existed, so you need a cause to be machria, to determine that it should exist as opposed to non-exist, to not exist. But if there's something that could never have not existed, that's like you have a die with the number 6 engraved on every side. So no matter how you throw it, you're not going to say, well, what's the cause it landed on 6? And therefore, we have no choice, logically, to to answer our contradiction between fact A that must be true, namely that there has to be a first cause that doesn't have a reason for its existence, that nothing causes it to be what it is, nothing causes it to exist, versus fact number two, which also has to be correct, also has to be true, that everything needs a cause. The answer is, everything only needs a cause if it theoretically could have not existed. But something that theoretically could never have not existed doesn't need a cause. And the first cause was that. Clearly, there's no way out of this. The first cause is what we call in Hebrew, Mechuyev HaMetzius, or Mochrach HaMetzius. Something that could never have not been here. Yes, it's a different type of existence than we can imagine. It's a different type of existence that we could understand. And right now, I want to digress, and I want to explain that just because we cannot understand this, and we cannot comprehend this, doesn't mean that we have not successfully proven it. Because comprehending something and proving its truth are two completely different things. For example, somebody who's blind meaning he never saw light, he was born blind. You will never be able to explain to that blind person the difference between blue and red. Everybody knows that a blind person cannot understand the difference between light and darkness. He cannot understand what light is. Because if he never experienced it, he can't comprehend it. However, even though he can't comprehend it or understand it, he can still prove that it's there. Light waves are provable. The light leaves footprints all over the scientific world that you could prove on paper that light exists. Not only can you prove that light exists, you can prove there's a difference mathematically between blue and red and green and yellow. And a blind man can prove that too. And a blind man can say to himself, there's such a thing as light. It bounces off things, it has different colors, it has a whole spectrum. He will have no idea what he's talking about. But he will be right. When I say he'll have no idea what he's talking about, it means he won't be able to picture what he's talking about. He won't be able to envision what he's talking about. He won't be able to comprehend what he's talking about. But he will know for a fact that he is right. The human brain doesn't create its own information. The human brain absorbs information, processes it, and spits it back in different forms. That's a big limitation to what the human brain can comprehend. It means we can only comprehend what we have experienced. A blind man can only comprehend what he experienced, and that does not include light, it does not include color. I'll give you another example. We were in school, our teachers told us, well, different teachers told us different things. Teacher would tell us, we would ask her, where does space end? And the teacher would say, space never ends. And we would raise our hand and we'd ask the teacher, teacher, what do you mean space never ends? Doesn't make any sense. How could it never end? It has to everything end somewhere. And the teacher would say, well, we can't comprehend infinity, but space is infinite. Okay. Another teacher would say something even worse. Space ends. Raise our hand, say, teacher, what do you mean space ends? How could it end? What happens afterwards? What can exist without space? And teacher will say, well, we can't comprehend it, but space ends. Now, mathematically, one of the two things are true, either space ends or space doesn't end. Either way, we can't comprehend it, because we never experienced infinity, and we never experienced a spaceless environment. But one of those two things have to be true. Again, you see, that just because you can't comprehend something doesn't mean you can't prove it. Now, reality is space does end, because as we said, you cannot have an infinite amount of something. So space has to end somewhere, because no matter how far out it goes, the amount of miles in space is always going to be finite. So the first cause, the Siba Rishayna, is what we call Mukhrach HaMetzius. We cannot comprehend that. Because we are only used to existence that we're only used to existence that theoretically could have not been here. Everything theoretically could have not been here. This happens to exist. The chair, the table, the doors, the ceiling, the whole building, the whole world only happens to exist. And if it happens to exist, happens requires a reason or a cause. But if something doesn't happen to exist, but something exists because intrinsically it had to exist, it could never have not existed, and then such a thing does not need a cause. And it's mukhrach, it has to be that the first cause is such an entity. What else do we know about this first cause? We know that the first cause, number one, is above time and space. We know that the first cause could never have not been here. We know that the first cause has no reasons and no causes. Well, this leads us to conclude many other things about this first cause. Number one, if it's above time and space, it can never change. Because in order to change, you need a before and you need an after. Without before and after, without time, you can't have before and after. So the first cause can never change. If it can never change, it can never die. If it can never die, it can never disappear. You can never, if today you're living, if today you exist, and then later you don't exist, that's a change. And you can't have a change without time. And if you're above time, you can't change. So this first cause is above time and space, can never change, can never die, can never disappear. The first cause also has no reasons for it to exist. Now let's think about what that means. What is the reason why I exist, and not only exist, what is the reason why I am what I am? When I ask what's the reason why I am what I am, what I mean is what makes me me. The reason why I am what I am is because I have, well, I have eyes, I have nose, I have a mouth, I have a body. All the things that make me me, that's the cause of my existence. When I say cause of my existence, it doesn't only mean what caused me to be born. It means what caused me to be me. All the things that that get together to comprise me, that's my cause. Everything in the world has several things, at least two, I guess, that have many things that get together to comprise what they are. There's shape, there's form, there's substance. There's at the very least, chomer and tzura, there's form and substance for everything in the world. There's texture, there's something. There theoretically could be, let's say, a substance without form, but whatever characteristics that substance without form has or may have, if such a thing exists, that's the cause of its existence. Its characteristics are its cause. If it wouldn't have these characteristics, it wouldn't have this cause. If it wouldn't be put together from these characteristics, it wouldn't be what it is. So it's being put together by all these elements or components of its existence, that's its cause. Being that the first cause has no cause, has no reason for its existence, it cannot have any of these components. It cannot have an eyes, a nose, or mouth, because if it would, then the combination of these things are its cause. And you could say, well, what caused the eyes and nose and mouth to get together? This first cause can never have any characteristics or can never have any attributes that would allow you to ask, okay, what put these things together? What's the reason they're together? Why are they this way as opposed to another way? Why does he have these attributes, the first cause, as opposed to other attributes? Once you attribute to the first cause different characteristics, now you're attributing a cause. You're taking him away from the category of having no reason. Because once you establish something and say, well, why is it this way if it could have been that way? Why does it have, how did it get these characteristics? Why does it have these characteristics? These characteristics are what cause it. Has no cause, it has no length, it has no width, it has no height, it can't be a physical thing. Not only cannot be a physical thing, it can't have any boundaries or parameters or defining limitations. In other words, let's take something that's not physical. Communism. Communism is different than, let's say, socialism. Why? Well, because there is a limitation to what we consider communism, and that what that does is it makes sure that the definition of communism does not encroach on socialism. That makes them different. And that's the cause of what makes communism communism, is its definition, its parameters. In Lashon HaKodesh, the word for definition and the word for limitation is the same thing, geder. In English also, definition. Something is defined, meaning something is explained in a certain way, but something is defined by what creates its boundaries, its limitations. If the first cause doesn't have any reasons or doesn't have any cause, means it can't have any definitions, meaning it's no boundaries. If it has no boundaries, it cannot have a description. It cannot have any attributes, any accidental attributes, any characteristics, anything that's incidental to it. Because if it would, this would be its cause. Therefore, the first cause can't be physical. It can't, well, besides which, anything physical has to be within time and space. It cannot be physical, it cannot have any attributes. It can't be made up of different things, because if it would, that would be a reason for it being what it is. In Lashon HaKodesh, this is called Kuloi Poshut. The first cause is Kuloi Poshut. It has no characteristics. This means that, let's say, by me, I have a lot of characteristics. I have arms, I have legs, I have a memory, I have creativity, thought process, I have a thinking process. All of these things are different, and they get together at these different building blocks of what I am, and that's what makes me me. The first cause that has no reason for what it is cannot have any of these building blocks. It's all one gestalt, it's all one Kuloi Poshut, without any boundaries, without any definitions, without any way to distinguish between where it is and where it is not, what it is and what it is not. Well, you could say there's no scope in terms of a way to describe it. There's no scope in terms of it having certain characteristics, because those characteristics would be its cause. Can the first cause, can there be more than one of them? Can there be more than one first cause? The answer is no, there can't. First of all, two things can't be a first cause. But the question is, can there be two of these entities that are Mukhrach HaMetzias, that are Kuloi Poshut, that we're describing? The answer is no, there can't. Because in order for something to be plural, in order for plurality to exist, in order for something to be quantifiable, it has to have boundaries. Without boundaries, you can't have quantity. Why is that? Well, if we have four chairs over there, at this table there's four chairs. Why is chair number one not chair number two? Why are they two different things and not one? Well, the answer is they take up different space, they have different backs, they have different legs. Because the definition and the boundaries of one do not encroach on the boundaries and definitions of number two, they remain separate. Therefore, they're two different things. Why is communism and socialism two different things? Because they're described differently. They have a different definition. They have different boundaries. They have different gedorim. Why are the svarim in this room not one sefer? Why are they different? The reason why they're plural, that there's a multiplicity of them, that there are many of these svarim, is because the space one takes up, and what makes one one is not what makes the other one the other one. But if, let's say, there would be something without any boundaries, without any definitions to say that, okay, it doesn't encroach in the next one, then there can't be more than one of those. In the world that such a thing lives in, so to speak, is not something that you could have another one of? Because the question will be, if there are two of them, what makes one not two and what makes two not one? What separates them? In order to separate two things, there has to be a definition for both of them that limits them to what they are, as opposed to being the other thing as well. A chair has the space it takes up, and what it is not the other one. Any concept you want, the reason why there's two things, name any two things in the world, an apple and an orange. Why are the apple and the orange two different things? Because the borders, the limitations of the apple, the shape of the apple, the limitations of the apple are different than the limitations of the orange. But if you have something that doesn't have limitations, you can't have two. You can't even quantify it. It's not that there has to be one and you can't have two, like you can't have two first place winners in a race. You also can't have two of those. It's not for the same reason. The reason you can't have two is because you can only have one, and by definition there's one and not two. Over here, it's not that you can only have one because it's the first, and you can't have a second. That's true regarding Sibari, regarding its being a first cause, but being Kuloi Poshut and Mukhrach HaMetzias, you can't have two. The reason is not because one is first and you can't have a second, but rather because a Mukhrach HaMetzias that has no borders cannot be quantified. It's not possible quantity. Quantity only exists when there's limitation, borders, and definitions between the different units. If something doesn't have definitions, it cannot be a unit. If it can't be a unit, it can't even be quantified. So we know that this first cause, this Mukhrach HaMetzias, this thing that's above time and space, cannot be quantified, and therefore there can only be one of them. Next thing we know, can this first cause be mechanical, be unthinking, or does it have to be sentient? Does it have to be aware? Or is it unaware? Is it just a mechanical, robotic cause? The answer is it cannot be unaware. It cannot be mechanical. It has to be sentient and it has to be able to choose. The reason is because this first cause caused everything else. Or it caused the next cause that created the domino effect that created everything else. When the first cause created this, it was either one of two ways, either by choice or not by choice. Not by choice meaning it had no choice and it had to create everything else. It had to. It either had a choice or had no choice. If it had a choice, it's sentient. If it had no choice and it had to, the question is what made it have to? What could have impacted on this first cause that made it, that forced it to create everything else? If it wasn't a choice, then it was forced. If it wasn't a choice, then it had to do it. If it had to do it, what you're saying is that something impacted on it and something made it do it. And then it's not the first cause anymore. So if that option is out, the only other option is that it had to do it by choice. In order for this first cause to retain the title first cause, in order for it to be a first cause, and nothing impacted on it, nothing made it happen, it was there alone without anything else once upon a time. It was the cause of all causes. In order to create whatever it created, in order to cause whatever it caused, had to have been by total and complete choice. Nothing could have made it do that. Nothing could have made it create anything. Because then something impacted it, and that caused it to do what it did, and that's a contradiction to it being a first cause. So what we know about this first cause, we know that there exists a first cause. We know that there is only one and not two. We know it's above time and space. We know that it is the cause of everything. We know that it's a sentient entity, and it's not mechanical. We know it can't be physical. We know it's what we call kulei pashut. It has no characteristics. It's a very interesting thing out there. What are we going to name it? Any ideas? The Jewish people have a name for this first cause. We call it Hashem. We worship the first cause. We worship the Mukhrach HaMetzias, the Mechuyev HaMetzias. We worship the cause of causes, the creator of everything. We don't need anybody to tell us that the first cause exists. We don't need anybody to tell us that a Mukhrach HaMetzias exists. We don't need anybody to tell us any of this. It's all poshut, it's all proven, it's all simple reason. The Chiddush is that this first cause, that's our God. Some people worship sticks, some people worship stones, some people worship trees, and some people worship mountains, some people worship statues. We worship the first cause. There's no question that tree exists. The question is it God? There's no question the mountain exists. The question is it God? And there's no question that the first cause, the Mukhrach HaMetzias, exists. If you want, you can call a tree God, and they can worship it, and that'll be your God. So you'll ask a tree worshiper, how do you know God exists? You'll say, look at it, there it is. That's my God. If you ask a Jew, how do you know your God exists? He'll say, what do you mean? Look at it, it's the first cause, it has to be there. Mukhrach HaMetzias. L'maylam itevo zman, l'maylam izman umakam. There's a first cause that caused everything, that's a sentient entity, that's above time and space, that's our God. And that, by the way, is how the Ran, that great sage, the Ran, learns the mitzvah of Emunah. The Ran in Drushas HaRan says that the reason why the mitzvah to believe in God was stated in an unusual manner, instead of stating, thou shalt believe in me, the Torah says, Anoichi Hashem Lekecha, which is a statement of fact, as opposed to a command, is because the mitzvah of Anoichi Hashem Lekecha is not to believe that there's a creator, and not to believe there's a Mukhrach HaMetzias, not to believe that there's a first cause, because that we know without that. The mitzvah of Anoich Hashem Lekecha is to have emunah that the first cause, the creator that we know exists, that is our leader. That's our God, meaning that's the one that took us out of Egypt. That's the one that gave us the mitzvahs on Har Sinai. That's emunah. Emunah doesn't mean to believe that there's a creator, that there's a first cause. Emunah doesn't mean that we should believe all these things that we know are there, exist in the first cause. Because that's the same way there's no emunah to believe. It doesn't make sense to say there's emunah to believe there's a mountain or a tree. What do you mean emunah? There's a mountain and a tree. Take a look, it's there. So too, there's no emunah to believe that there's a first cause and there's a creator of the world, but rather, the emunah is to believe that this first cause is the one that's been leading us throughout the generations, the one that gave us the Torah and Har Sinai. And therefore, he says, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, the mitzvah says, the Torah says, I am Hashem your God. The word Hashem, Yudke Vovke, you know what Yudke Vovke means? Hashem Hanechbar Hazeh, I'm reading from the Ran. Hashem Hanechbar Hazeh Miarba Oisius, the name Yudke Vovke, who Moira al Ilam Mechuyevas HaMetzius. It's referring to the first cause, the Mechuyev HaMetzius, the entity that could never have not been here. Vizeloi Bol Tzad HaMitzvah. This is not part of the mitzvah, the fact that there's a yud-kei vav-kei. Aval al-tzar ha-davar ha-poshet shahayu moidim boi kvar. But that's just a reference to a fact that everybody knew about. The same way they knew that there are mountains and trees, they knew that there was a mukhra hametzias, a first cause. Shleihoyu lahem sofik klal shahayu nimtza boilu mukhiv hametzias. Nobody had any doubt that there's a mukhiv hametzias. We just reasoned it. It's poshet. There has to be. There can't be an infinite regression of causes. It had to have started somewhere. And once it started somewhere, we know a lot about the place it started, with the first cause. Aval mashahoyu machadish lahem achshav, what Hashem told them now, what he was machadish to them now, what he told them now that's new to them. U'mitzvah shi'aminu boy, the mitzvah that he gave them, that they should believe in him, is hu she'omar kemedaber ba'adoy. He's speaking as if he's talking about himself. And Hashem says, Anoichi Hashem Loikecha, meaning, you know that there's a Mechuyiv Hametzias, you know that there's a first cause. Ani hu oisoi Mechuyiv Hametzias manhigecha. I am that Mechuyiv Hametzias, the one you know exists. I am the one that leads you. I am your manhig. V'hu perisha loikecha. And that's what it means, Asher, say, Sicha Mi'eretz Mitzrayim, that took you out of Egypt. V'hine shoyush ha-mitzvah hazoi, says the Ran, she'namin she'me'oysa, asher nachnu kvar yoidim she'mochuyiv ha-metzias. That which we know, we already knew was a mochuyiv ha-metzias, she'aseichel ha-netuyiv odem achriach zeh, v'yef she'lach lo'ikolov b'shum ponim. Again, she'aseichel ha-netuyiv odem achriach zeh. A person's logic, a person's common sense, demands that there's a first cause, that there's a mochuyiv ha-metzias, and it's not possible to disagree with such a thing. Mimenu magia, from him comes our mitzvahs. He took us out of Egypt. Ani Hashem Elokecha. Ani Hashem. I am Yud Kevovke, the Mechuyiv Hametzias Elokecha. I am the one who leads you. Elokecha means your manhig. Asher hoytzei sicha mi'eretz Mitzrayim. And that's emun. Emun isn't to believe that a Mechuyiv Hametzias exists. Emun is to believe that Mechuyiv Hametzias, that creator of the world, is the one that led us throughout the generations and continues to lead us till today. So when we talk about proving God, and somebody's going to ask you, well, how could you prove that God exists if you don't even understand what God is? The answer is the question's a mistake, because yes, it's true. If I want to prove this table exists, so I can't prove the table exists if I set out to prove it until I know what a table is. If I set out to prove that George Washington existed, I can't set out to prove it until I define what George Washington, who he was. But I would not be able to say, well, I'm proving that God exists unless I first set out to understand what God is. But that's not what we're doing. What we're doing is, we're not proving God exists in that sense. What we're doing is, we're proving that there's a Mukhra Hametzias, that there's a Siba Rishoyna. We're proving the characteristics of that Siba Rishoyna, of that first cause, of that sentient being that created everything. And then we're giving it a name. Yudke Vovke. Hashem. That's its name. You can call it whatever you want, but that's its name. It's not that we're proving a new entity called Hashem. We're taking an entity that's just as obvious as the mountain and the tree, and we're saying that is our God. And therefore, you take a look, I'll show you, it's a very, very meduyik in the Rambam. The Rambam, in three places that we're going to talk about tonight, mentions the mitzvah to believe in God. But he does it differently, in two different ways. In Sefer HaMitzvahs, the Rambam says, we're obligated to believe in God. What does it mean we're obligated to believe in God? We have to believe there's a first cause, and the mitzvah is from the Pasuk Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. First he says, there's a mitzvah to believe in God, mitzvah to believe in Elokus. Then he says what the mitzvah is. Fine. In the Yud Gimel Ikrim, in the Pir Shamishnais and Sanhedrin, the Rambam does it the same way. The Rambam says, Hayesoid HaRishayin Lahamin Mitzius HaBoyrei Yizbarach Shmai, mitzvah to believe in God. For who? What's God? Sheyesham Nimtza Sholim B'chol Darkei HaMitzius Hu'ilas HaMitzius Kula, etc. First he says there's a mitzvah to believe in God, and then he explains what God is. However, The Rambam in Mishneh Torah does it differently. The Rambam there doesn't say there's a mitzvah to believe in God and then explain what God is. He does the opposite. There's a mitzvah. The most important thing in the world is to believe that there is a first being. He's the cause of everything. He's the without him there would be no world. He's the only emes in the world. And then in Halacha Hey, the Rambam says that entity is God. So why did the Rambam in the Yud Gimel Ikra, in Pirsha Mishnayis, and in Sefer HaMitzvahs, explain it by saying first there's a mitzvah to believe in God, and then what God is, as opposed to in Mishneh Torah, where the Rambam said that he could have said is to believe in God, and this is what God is. He didn't say that. He says there's a mitzvah to believe, and then he gave all the characteristics of God, and then he said, and that's God. Just as incidentally, the Ramchal does it the same way as in Mishneh Torah. The Ramchal at the beginning of Derech Hashem says, "Kol ish miYisrael tzorich shiyamin v'yeda." Everybody has to believe and know. Sheisha motzi rishon kadmoin v'nitzri shehintzi umamzi kol mashinimtzi b'metzias. There's a mitzvah. Everybody has to know all these things about the first cause. V'hu alaka baruchu, and that's God. Why sometimes do they say there's a mitzvah to believe in God and then explain God? Other times they say there's a mitzvah to believe in all of these characteristics, and then it says, you should know, that's God. The answer is, because there are two parts to the mitzvah of Emunah. There's a mitzvah, lahamin v'leida. Like the Ramchal says, kol ish miYisrael tzorich lahamin v'leida. Emunah and yediyah. You have to believe and you have to know. Belief means that you have to believe it. You have to choose that you're going to accept this. Yediyah, we all know, is more than Emunah. Yediyah is you know something for a fact and you don't have to believe it. Yediyah, when we talk about proofs of God, when we talk about a sensory perception of God, we're talking about yediyah. When we're talking about belief in God, just accepting it without the proofs, that's Emunah. Therefore, the process of Emunah and the process of Yediyah are two different things. The process of Yediyah is, like we said, first there is we have to point to the Sibah Rishonah, the Mukhrach HaMetzius, all those characteristics we know, and then we say, we call that's our God. The same way somebody, even Avodah Zarah, takes a look at a mountain and says, that mountain is my God. Jews take a look at the mitzvah, the Sibah Rishonah, and say, that's God. That's Yediyah. When the Rambam talks about Yediyah, Yisoid HaYisoidish of Shoyrish HaChokmes Leida, he first points to that Mukhrach HaMetzius, that Siba of all Sibas everybody knows exists, and then he says, you should know, we call that God, that's our God. The Ramchal, Kol Ishmi Yisroel Tzorach Shiyamin V'Yeda, once you say Yeda, he points to the Mukhrach HaMetzius and says, we call that God. But the two places where the Rambam says Laham in to believe, where we're not doing the proof, we're not first pointing to the entity that we know exists and naming that God, but rather we say, there's a mitzvah to believe in God. Now, you can say, what are the requirements of the mitzvah? In those places, when we say Emunah, we say there's God first, we say mitzvah to believe in God, and then we describe what God is. So, it doesn't make sense to ask Akasha, well, how could you prove God if you don't know what God is? The answer is, we're not proving God, we're just saying that, we're just naming that Mukhrach HaMetzius we know exists, that Bria, that Borei Olam we know exists, we're naming him God. And before we end tonight, we're going to end with one word from the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish addresses another famous question that many people who don't understand many Kofrim ask. They say, if everything needs a creator, then what good does it do? What do you gain by saying there's a Hashem who created Hashem? It's a Teretz Chazon Ish in Emunah Bitachon. The Chazon Ish says that it's not a kasha. He says it's mamish a kasha from somebody who thinks and doesn't think it through. He doesn't think. He just shoots from the hip. Because the only reason why something needs a creator is because it's Efshar HaMetzias. It could have theoretically not existed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Mukhrach HaMetzius. Something that's a Mukhrach HaMetzius is not a physical thing. It doesn't have length, width, or breadth. Such a thing doesn't need a creator because there's no option that it shouldn't be created. So we've established tonight not only proof that God exists, but we've proven all the characteristics that we, all the characteristics that we know about God. We've reasoned them. And if you take a look in the Ramchal at the beginning of Derech Hashem, you will find that all the things about God that he says we have to know, the Ramchal says all of those things, yis'amtsu, they can be proven by logic, and the exact things that the Ramchal mentioned that we need to know about God are the things we covered in this week's shiur.